Hello and welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Well podcast. I am your host Q. At the time of this recording, Bitcoin is trading at just about 66,000 USD and 93,000 Canadian. You know, over the last week, we have started to see rumblings of the BIP 110 fork. We are seeing now Russia have a larger conversation around whether or not they're going to accept Bitcoin for cross-border trade. And of course, Mr. Tiny Hands, Donald Trump, had his own thoughts around China and election fraud. So we're going to get into it with two of my friends, two wonderful Bitcoiners, Hank Hudson and Alex McShane. Gentlemen, welcome to the Bitcoin Well podcast.
What's up, Q? Thanks for
having me. Thank you for joining me, guys. You know, we've had quite a few conversations myself with each of you individually. We haven't yet had the chance to kind of put our brains together. I'm hoping this doesn't turn into just three friends just shooting the shit like last week, Joe. All your fault last week, Joe. But I digress. I want to talk first. You know, over the last year, we have seen a new all-time high of 122K, and we are now trading at about 66,000 USD. McShane, you and I were in the throes of the bull and bear run during the last cycle. I just want to first get your thoughts. Like, what was that feeling when we got to 100K for you?
It was pretty special, man. It was fun, you know, hanging out with some friends, but we knew it was all coming. So it was like a fun moment. I think 120 was a really fun moment, you know, crossing 100 again after falling back down. It was just, a nice validation, but ultimately it's not the important thing, right? The important thing are the verifiable assurances that Bitcoin proposes, you know, allowing you to transact freely, unstoppable money, and a strong store of value, and money that the government can't take from you if you self-custody properly. So that is the kind of thing that excites me every day. But yeah, you know, the price hurdles are fun cause to celebrate along the way.
Yeah, Hank, I want to ask you a similar question. I don't think you and I really had a chance to talk about just the general price of it, but what were those feelings for yourself in that moment where we crossed 100K or approaching 122K last summer?
Oh, it was such a delicious I told you so to all of my family and friends that have called me crazy over the years, right? I remember we were doing the show and we were live on air when it crossed 100,000, and I had all my friends and family texting me being like, maybe you weren't so crazy with this whole Bitcoin thing. So to Alex's point, you know, there was definitely an element of validation there, which was exciting. And just kind of seeing it do what we all expected it to do in practice. And, you know, now we're down to the doldrums of the 60,000 markers again, but it was just an exciting time. And I think it kind of helped prove the point a little further. Like, listen, this is just the start. 100,000 was a benchmark. We're back down below it, but I'm super bullish on what's going on despite the price action we've been seeing recently. I had the opportunity to speak with Senator Lummis a few weeks ago, and she seems as bullish as ever. And I think we're headed in the right direction, even if the price might not be reflecting that.
Hey, man, doldrums of 60K, that's a crazy phrase. 60K.
I know, it is.
It's only the most appreciating asset of all time.
Hey, we're spoiled.
I mean, McShane, I remember when we broke below 60K during the last cycle and everyone was like, oh no. It's like, man, wouldn't it be nice to buy some cheap sats at like 40K right now? I was thinking about this last night. I was like, man, I should have stacked harder at 30 and 40K. So I should probably stack as hard as possible right now at 60K, because in 4 years' time, we will all be regretting that, because we will, sadly, I don't believe, see these prices again. At least once we're out. I'm not going to do the, you will never see Bitcoin below 65K again tweet. Like, no, you will never hear that from me.
I was going to say, you're going to get clipped.
Yeah, right. Where do you think we are in 4 years? Q.
Dude, I mean, if I could answer confidently with that, I am I don't have a job. I'm not on this call. I'm in Vegas picking numbers or horses on a track. That said, we're going to a million. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I do want to, like, the sentiment is something I want to, like, double click on though, Hank. Like, you brought up, like, the victory lap. We were able to take it 100K. Like, Thanksgiving last year was awesome. I had family like asking me like, how do they buy more Bitcoin after 2 years ago, everyone being like, yo, like, what are you doing with your life? Like, stop buying Bitcoin. So like that victory lap was great. Not so much right now. Like, let's be real. Like, what is the vibe been just amongst family and friends, where last summer everyone was like, dude, you were right. This summer, maybe less so,
as you said, Thanksgiving this year, past year was really fun. I felt like the smartest guy in the room. And yeah, you know, you have a lot of those people in your family and friends being like, hey, is Bitcoin dead? Is now the time to buy? And it's like, it's always the time to buy, guys. And as far as sentiment, you know, I think as we've released over the last like 3 or 4 years, you know, the difference between Bitcoin and crypto has really become apparent to those in, you know, in the know, so to speak. And I think that the sentiment, right, it's not as sexy as it used to be. Crypto was kind of sexy, right? And I've echoed this statement quite a few times. And I think we need to get the sexy back into Bitcoin, because crypto is kind of this, for a lot of people, this hope, right? Like, you could transform your life overnight. And that's what drew so many people to it, for better or worse. And when you see those big price movements, that obviously gets a lot of these people in the media excited about it again, which gets the Twitterverse and the TikToks moving. And then you get it's. So while sentiment right now is down compared to what we've especially seen like during COVID, that was crazy times when we had free money everywhere. I think we're just waiting for that next spark. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a nation state thing. Maybe it's the Clarity Act or something else. But I think we're only one spark away from kind of taking off of where we left in the last bull run. So I'm really optimistic. The groundwork seems stronger than it's ever been. So while the sentiment is low, I think it'll be kind of a flip of the switch, and we'll be right back when it does happen. I just don't know what that event is. Maybe you guys have some thoughts on it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know. I like these times. I like the sideways price action. I like it. It just removes a lot of the noise. You know, the companies that were faking it shut down and stop operating. The people who were grifting go broke and kind of shut up for a while. People stop bugging you for money and Bitcoin, and you can just quietly build. And the real ones, they understand the value, like the value proposition. They understand what getting in now means, and they're not too fixated on the price action. Like, there's been a complete narrative shift over the last 6 years. You know, we've become somewhat like dip the big toe into institutional money. And I think that is going to further capture a lot of the attention of people from the outside onto the Bitcoin price. They're going to be really, really focused on price. And I think one thing we didn't do as great a job of this cycle is getting people to self-custody and talk about the benefits of actually holding your own keys and the self-sovereignty and freedom that provides. You know, the benefit of having an open source protocol and money that's separate from the state. Yeah, so I'm kind of curious to see. I my prediction is that will be the narrative carrying us forward into the next cycle. Some people may tell you all the self-custody, you know, it's failed, it's gone, it's never going to resurface as like the predominant Bitcoin narrative. Well, that might be true. There's still a pretty large and growing contingent of niche users who are interested in having those guarantees, those freedom guarantees, the ability to transact, you know, without a trusted third party. So I think the burden is on us to help promote that. And I think that is probably not ever going to be the ultimate driver of retail adoption again. I think I could say that safely. I think usually price is what interests people at first, but it can remain the reason why people stay in it and keep accumulating through the bear rather than just jumping on the bandwagon every time they see, you know, some JPEG selling for multiple millions of dollars. Because that, like, the driver is a play on people's desperation, right?
Of course.
They're essentially gambling away, trying to get rich quick, what very little money they're able to save under the tax regime of their state, and with the kind of silent killer of debasing currency. So Bitcoin's a great solution to all of that. And I think you don't have to dig very far to sort of begin to understand that. So that's kind of the things I'd like to see people focus on in the next cycle. We need to build products and services that make that easy.
Well, speaking of products and services that make self-custody easy, you are on the podcast of one of the only non-custodial exchanges available around the world, and the only non-custodial exchange available in the United States. In fact, I have a special code for all of our listeners and viewers. If you go into bitcoinwell.com/signup, use promo code podcast, you don't get anything. I just get to keep my job. So please use the promo code podcast, set up a new account so I can show my boss that this is actually worth our time, effort, energy, and money. But yes, like, we are a non-custodial exchange. It's great. You can't buy Bitcoin unless you have some form of self-custody set up. And if you need help with that process. We do have Bitcoin advisors, myself and other members of our Infinite team. So just go on over to bitcoinwell.com/infinite to speak with one of our advisors today. I do want to ask, because again, this idea of sentiment, I think, is so important. Having gone through now my second full cycle, I think one thing that I've like really paid attention to is like when there's this infighting, when there's a lot of like bickering amongst friends about what feels like nothing, to be honest with you. And like, I'm going to say it like with my chest so you guys don't misunderstand, a whole lot of nothing that we're fighting over. It's just a sign of a bear market. That to me is like the perfect indicator. I don't know, Hank or McShane, if either of you guys feel similarly or not.
What are people fighting over now? I haven't.
Well, I want to simplify it without giving any credence to anything. So like, we've all read the Block Size Wars. And if you haven't, please just go read the Block Size Wars before you start talking about BIP 110, because it's the same dang thing. It's like, we already did this. We've had this argument. We've had this issue around block sizes. And at the same time too, like with the whole ordinals craze, which was dumb, but it was a great like sandbox test of, can Bitcoin handle increased volume? Like, we frankly showed, if we have mass adoption tomorrow, if the entire world said, okay, we're on the Bitcoin standard, we are not ready for that. We are not ready for that. And let's be really upfront and honest about that. We need to your point, Alex, like, keep building the products and services to get to a place and a point where over 8 billion people in the world can transact with Bitcoin freely and as easily as they are using whatever payment systems they have locally and globally.
Who do you think got more people involved in Bitcoin, Casey Rodimer or Mechanic?
Casey Rodimer.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
like, I would also argue that, like, I'll use a sports analogy because like no one likes sports that I'm talking to be honest with you. So it's like my way of trolling McShane. So like in American football, there's a concept of like a coaching tree. When like you have a really good coach, his assistant coaches go on to have great careers, and you want to hire those assistant coaches. I believe that Andreas Antonopoulos is like that original coach. And all of us who have like our favorite Bitcoiners who like taught us, be it Saylor or Breedlove or Safe, like any of these people, like they all come from the school of Andreas. And I think Andreas has orange-pilled and taught more people about Bitcoin. I should also give a nod to Max and Stacy Kaiser, just, you know, using orange pill. But like, they all come from the school of Antonopoulos. Like, he has had more influence on Bitcoin and helped more people adopt Bitcoin than Casey Rodimer did, full stop. Mm-hmm.
So he's like the Kyle Shanahan of the coaching tree. It's like he has the McVays and all the other ones. Yes. Yeah, I get the sports references.
Yes. I'm a sports guy. Thank you, Hank.
Here's a question kind of relating to something we talked about. You know, it's like there's like a lot of this infighting in the space, which Q, you mentioned, could be the signal of a bear market. Why do you think we as Bitcoiners aren't focusing on like the real problems at hand right now that would get people to actually be more curious about Bitcoin? Like right now, I think we can all agree inflation is killing us. My groceries have never been more expensive. My gas has never been more expensive. And my purchasing power has never been weaker than it is currently, right? That's something we can all get behind. Do you guys think there isn't a reason we're not like pounding the drum on that harder? Because like, we need to relate this to the problems of real people for them to even be somewhat interested. Yet we're like infighting about BIP whatever, and like, you know, putting, was it the stuff into the blocks, like the garbage or whatever, like the information. Like, why are we talking about this stuff when we should just be focusing on like, here's a real use case for Bitcoin that would help people right now? Why aren't we talking about that stuff?
I think loads of people are. I think just if you understand that problem, you tend to, you know, there's just like this bias where you've already taken in that information. You're ignoring people that are kind of sending you the beginner steps. There's a lot of people focused on just the basic, the basic promises that Bitcoin or guarantees that it offers. I think the infighting stuff is interesting because these are, you know, future focused people. They're talking about problems that really haven't occurred yet. We don't have full blocks. Spam is not destroying Bitcoin now. They're talking about something that's coming down the line in the future. I think it's important that we have those discussions. I would rather it be done in a free and sort of open way and have those fights here than behind closed doors. But what I don't like is people telling you, you know, this is money and this is how you're supposed to use money, gatekeepers, Puritans. Bitcoin is orthogonal to all of the other sort of monetary systems that have existed. It's nothing like those. I don't think someone could tell you all that it is in a sentence. It's not really our place to decide. It's both, well, it is and it isn't. It's a free market and it's a commons, and we have to respect it and take care of it as such. It's complicated. I don't know, you know, the best path forward for making changes, improvements, updates. And so it's important to have clear arguments on both sides to debate those things. You know, with regard to BIP 110, I'm not super interested in what they're offering. I think you can see kind of the desperation. You know, they themselves have said, we're happy to fork off and just sort of die on a chain that no one uses. I think the market will just wholly reject them at that, because they don't see a problem with what it's claiming to solve, and it doesn't solve the problem that it's claiming to solve. It's not going to solve arbitrary data on Bitcoin.
Real quick, I think there's an important point that you made, and this is, again, to go back to the answer, to answer your question. It's like, it's sadly the same reason why in this country, like, you can walk down the street and more people will tell you who the Kardashians are than like who is in charge of the Federal Reserve. It's like, what is sexy and what's not? And there's an element of that that has seeped into the Bitcoin ecosystem, whether or not we want to accept it. I do think that there are people who are like quietly building and trying to solve for the problems that we're discussing in ways that they're not maybe ready to share publicly. But over time, we will start to see more and more of these people who are building in stealth mode come out and share their products. And maybe it won't be a product that you, I, nor McShane necessarily want or need, but it is to help bring in a new crop of Bitcoiners. But there's something, McShane, that you said that I think is, it's so important, and it bothers the heck out of me about Bitcoiners. And it's this idea that so many people come to this and they're like, I'm a freedom maximalist, I want financial freedom, but then have the audacity to tell people, but you shouldn't spend your Bitcoin like that. No, you shouldn't do that with your Bitcoin. It's like, then you don't actually care about freedom. Like, you just want people to do what you want done, not what they themselves want or believe in. And, you know, it's like touching the hot stove. Like, you may know that, hey, no, like, you shouldn't trade your Bitcoin, but like, someone needs to touch the stove to learn that lesson themselves. So I just wanted to add those points.
That's kind of an interesting example. I wouldn't even go that far as to say, you know, the HODL mentality has been around for years and years now, but you can't really tell that to someone who's living in a village in a country whose state doesn't even print their own currency, who's watching, you know, they have no ability to affect the debasement or volatility that kind of controls their lives. They're going to have a really hard time holding their rent money in Bitcoin. And in that case, it's quite useful for them to be able to trade in and out of something like stable coins. So it's just, it's complicated, right? And at the end of the day, like you said, Q, you want people to be able to make their own sort of informed decisions about these things. I want people to do whatever they want with their Bitcoin. You know, go trade it away. That's fine. You know, I wouldn't recommend it, but if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Let me ask you.
I was just going to ask,
McShane mentioned this HODL mentality. I'd be curious, do you guys think that's still the same thing as it was like post-Saylor selling? Because he was kind of the HODL guy, right? Like, you never sell. Now he is sold, I think, on two different occasions now. Is HODL have a different meaning than maybe it did in the past now, because you have the high priest of Bitcoin actually selling it, and now it becomes, don't just accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, it's do what is necessary to accumulate it, even if that means selling in the short term. So I guess, like, is the ethos behind the idea of HODLing changed at all, you guys think, in the last couple of months with some of the things we've seen, especially from Saylor and Strategy?
Yes. Well, this was going to be a topic we cover, so we can get into it, and I want to just give the facts of it. So I believe it was like a few weeks ago, actually, Saylor did a second sale of Bitcoin. Now he sold 3,588 Bitcoin for roughly $216 million. For context, and I think this is really, really, really important, as of July 19th, Strategy still holds 843,000 Bitcoin. So that means that sale was less than 0.5% of their entire Bitcoin holding. one thing that we talked about last week that I believe this is part to do with why a company like MicroStrategy is selling their Bitcoin is the algorithmic trading that happens behind the scenes. Right now, many algorithms, they cannot properly articulate or see like what the value of this asset like Bitcoin is that is being held, because there's no sale. They have not seen the profits. But now, by introducing profits in some of these Bitcoin sales, you are now able to let the algorithms pick up and read, oh, if for 0.5% of this holding, they're able to generate a 200% return or whatever, I'm just making up a number, then they can start to extrapolate what does the rest of that asset on their balance sheet actually hold and mean. I think what's more telling though is not strategy selling, but what is the company that Mark Moss was the treasury advisor for that just announced yesterday that they're selling all of their Bitcoin? And wow, this was something I was bringing up last year to clients where people were like,
Yeah.
Like, this was always my concern. And like, when people were like, oh, like Bitcoin will go down to this price or whatever, I'm like, well, you have to look at like the externalities that caused the last price collapse all the way down to 15K, or even the ones in 2017, 18, and so on and so forth. And these were always triggered by some sort of outside event. I have believed for a year plus, so I'm taking my victory lap right now, that it is the treasury companies that are mismanaged or not prepared for a market downturn that will become forced sellers, and that will aggravate the price of Bitcoin naturally. Now, look, I think Satsuma had like, what, 600 Bitcoin, so it wasn't like it was something egregious, but there are more of these companies that are going to be forced sellers, and that will cause a negative reflection in the price of Bitcoin. That said, as a publicly, you have a fiduciary duty to investors. That is vastly different than like you or I with the mentality of like, this Bitcoin I'm buying is for like my unborn children that I hope they're the ones that eventually get to use it, that I have zero intention of like directly using. That is my rant, McShane. I did cut you off to start, but I will turn it over to you.
Oh, you're good. You're good, man. I like, I'm happy we're pivoting into the treasuries. It's an important conversation. To answer your question though, Hank, I think the guy named like GameCube on Bitcoin Talk Forum accidentally created the HODL meme in late 2013 in sort of a whiskey fueled rant on the forum. He misspelled I am holding, you know.
Yeah.
Before that it was called hoarding, and there was kind of a series of people that were just accumulating Bitcoin. But the ecosystem was so small that it was frowned upon to hoard your Bitcoin because it prevented the spread of the circular economy. We were supposed to use it, you know, for goods and services. And then you have, you know, I am hodling. People start holding on for dear life to their Bitcoin. It becomes a really, really performant store of value, the most appreciating asset of all time. Then you arrive at something today. What's interesting about today, when people complain that MicroStrategy sells, it's like, what the fuck are you going to do about it? You should have bought Bitcoin. Like, you should have bought the underlying asset. You wouldn't have a problem. That's not your Bitcoin to decide. Even if you're a shareholder of MicroStrategy, you have very little influence over what, you know, Saylor and the board decide to do with their treasury. That's true of all treasury companies. Now, you would hope that they would continue to accumulate over time, but what's happened is the competition among these treasury companies, you know, they're all on the same team, right? Accumulate more Bitcoin broadly. But they do need to get creative, and they are experimenting, merging the two worlds of, you know, global capital markets and Bitcoin. So you see increased metrics, new invented sort of metrics and lending instruments. And some financial engineering there that pushes these companies further out on the risk curve. And what happens when you get pushed furthest out on the risk curve? Like you saying, we haven't quite seen it at this scale with these treasury companies yet, but you could get a cascading downward effect just as we have these bull effects. So that's all pretty natural, like market psychology, but the difference is if you're a Bitcoiner, that is, if you denominate it your world in Bitcoin, this has no effect. You don't always have to peg it to, Canadian bucks or or US dollars. Like if you think in terms of the Bitcoin itself, you get to decide. You can continue to accumulate, and this doesn't really have an effect on you. You're not a forced seller as long as you don't have third party claims on your Bitcoin, you're self-custodying. So I don't know. That being said, like it evolves over time, right? I would like to see more of a push for people to spend and use it as money, circular economies like you see popping up in Africa and in Costa Rica, you know, in Dominica, like Bitcoin Jungle. These are beautiful bottom-up ways of spreading these guarantees that Bitcoin offers that allow people to choose for themselves if they want to hold or if they want to sell. Contrast that with sort of the 2021-2022 top-down experiment of a government in El Salvador imposing Bitcoin on its people. And I think it's safe to say it was basically flatly rejected. I mean, you did get a few people adopting it and using it for goods and services. But if you go down to El Salvador, you know, your typical Salvadoran is going to be like, yeah, I don't use this shit. Like, what is this? This is complicated. I don't trust, you know, my government that much.
I'll even double down on that real quick because my dad works in construction. So I've met a lot of like his subcontractors, some of whom are El Salvadorian, who literally come here, work and attempt to like send money back. And I remember having a conversation with them about like, oh, like where are you, like how are you sending the money back? Western Union, like, well, why don't we use Bitcoin? And they literally laughed at the idea of having their family download the Chivo wallet. They were like, in no world do I want my family to like use this government sponsored like thing. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah, just to bring it back to treasury companies, like I actually wish Strike had won that contract because Chivo did a terrible job. Their ATMs were a horrible user interface. I went down there and used them in person, and yeah, nobody likes that app. It's not good. You know, a company that survived on the free market and provided goods and services sort of to millions of people, Strike is a far better alternative. To pivot it back to treasury companies, you want to talk about the news of, I believe yesterday, Q, Jack Mahler steps down as CEO of 21 Capital, which, I don't know, pretty bullish, good signal, I think, you know, good on him for sticking to his guns.
I have to do my job and really quickly remind everyone, despite, you know, all the conversation about Strike, they are a custodial exchange. And Bitcoin Well is the only non-custodial exchange available in the US. Use promo code podcast. You will not get anything. There's no discount. Just use it so I can keep my job, please. I want to double click on this though, because like, look, 21 is down 90%. Naka down 99%. Metaplanet down significantly from all-time highs. Like,
whoa. Talk to me. I'm just
talking. Yeah. No. I want to paint a picture. We're going to paint a picture. And then I want to like talk about, why do you think Jack, who built Strike, who in my opinion has done incredible work for Bitcoin, helping the country of El Salvador adopt a Bitcoin standard, why do you think him stepping down from 21 and Strike is a good thing?
I don't know, man. Do you want your Bitcoiners working side by side with Howard Lutnick? Like, I fucking don't.
Yes, I missed
him. I don't like it. I want him focused on Strike, man. I love Strike. I think it's, look, I've seen a lot of companies over the past year start to use Strike as a way to teach their, these are like small businesses, to teach their customers about Bitcoin and to get them to start using it. And I think that's incredibly bullish. I think there are enough treasury companies out there and they're having a hard enough time with this bull market. I think it's somewhat of a distraction to take every talented, young, ambitious, like hardworking CEO and now have them divide their attention and start trying to win the race of treasury companies when, you know, I'd rather they be focused on what kind of brought them to the dance in the first place. I think it's a little bit distracting. I think there are others that sort of arose organically that we'll see what happens in the bull market. They may make a great return. You know, it's really interesting to watch the pace of something like a Metaplanet, who has done basically everything they've said they would do. you know, they're not actively selling Bitcoin, but they are going to kind of release new instruments and, you know, high dividend paying products. It's interesting to see them try to compete with MicroStrategy. And I think that competition is ultimately good, but I don't want all of our best and brightest to suddenly turn to focus on treasury companies. We've seen time and time again what happens to the underlying business, some businesses that we've all been a part of. When the CEOs turn their attention to those things, you know.
What do you guys think happens with these treasury companies? Because we've seen, like you said, 99% down, Metaplanet, Satsuma, all those. Like, is what we know as a Bitcoin treasury company just like evolving before our eyes? Because it was like everybody was getting on board. You have a failing business. Let's buy Bitcoin, put it on the balance sheet. You're a Bitcoin treasury company now. Like, what's the next iteration of this? Or are we still kind of figuring it out? I mean, we have... selling Bitcoin after they said they never would. Like, what do you guys think happens next with these?
I think what was kind of lost in like the clickbaity version of Saylor and Danny's like back and forth squabble was Saylor's like vision of what like the world on a Bitcoin standard and publicly traded companies using Bitcoin in their treasury is not every single company being a financially engineered institution that just holds Bitcoin. Eventually that the net asset value, the NAV, should just trade at one. In the stock market, it will fluctuate between above one during bull markets and below one during bear markets because the stock market is a future pricing mechanism. What I believe and what I took away from Saylor's conversation is like, you know, Metaplanet's a great example. Like, this is a hotel chain. Be a hotel company, like do really well at that. And then just keep your cash reserves in Bitcoin. Create a whatever company, like create a media company and keep your cash reserves in Bitcoin. Create an insurance company, create a car company. Like, I think we're getting like Bitcoiners sometimes get like, they overdo it because of the echo chamber we live in. And like, I'm saying the hard truth because I think sometimes Bitcoiners don't realize that like you have created your own echo chamber by only listening to ideas and people that you agree with. Like, it is okay if Tesla buys Bitcoin on its balance sheet, leaves it, and then sometimes sells it. Like, that is a net positive for Bitcoin. Whether or not they're like, okay, yeah, you can now go back to buying a Tesla with Bitcoin is irrelevant to me. But the idea that more and more businesses should just operate their businesses to the best of their abilities and then save some of the excess cash in Bitcoin, you will naturally create Bitcoin treasury companies without this like artificial desire to just like, we need to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. Like, that should be our only priority. That is our North Star. Like, no, your North Star should be the product or service that you are trying to excel at giving to the world. Yeah.
So Q, are you saying you don't think Jaguar should turn into a Bitcoin treasury company anytime soon after that disastrous rebrand they had like a year ago? Do you see that they sold like 37 cars or something?
Yes.
Just embarrassing. So but like, might be the time.
I actually think they should. But again, they should focus on selling cars and then with the excess cash, because the way many, not all, but many well-run publicly traded companies operate is like they keep some level of cash on hand, but they have allocations. Like, some cash is meant to be used in the next 6 months. Some cash is meant to be used in the next 12 months. Some cash is meant to be used in 5 freaking years. Ding, ding, ding. Let's do that. Like, all right. This is
it's important to note. $1 million. They don't need to hold forever. Like, it's not just about the HODL. If it has monetary properties, you're going to see this out as well.
So like, I come from the Hollywood movie and TV industry. A lot of production companies, they will budget their production costs 2 years in advance, 4 years in advance. So they are sitting on cash sometimes with an eye on this is going to be spent on the new Avengers movie that's not even going to start filming until 20 whatever. That is the perfect opportunity to be like, hey, if we know we're going to sit on this for 4 freaking years, like, that's the perfect cycle of, all right, let's just put it in Bitcoin. Like, maybe our production budget can go up. Maybe we just don't even have to sell all of it. Maybe we can end up only having to sell half of what ends up being our Bitcoin holdings because the price appreciates appropriately. Of course, there are always risks. Like, nothing is perfect. But at the end of the day, like, there are these like pockets of opportunity. And I think that is what, as more people become educated about Bitcoin, we talk a lot about how like Bitcoin has just turned into a risk on asset, where when there's more liquidity in the market, we will see the price appreciate. And when liquidity contracts, so too does the price of Bitcoin. Well, eventually we need to absorb other things than just, you know, the bull market craze and when the government prints money. The other things that we can control or absorb as far as like Bitcoin adoption is when people have like long-term savings. Okay, you run an investment firm and your strategy is 2, 5, and 10-year treasury bonds. Well, why don't you switch out those 5-year bonds for Bitcoin, or those 10-year bonds that you're, the funds that you're allocating for those bonds into Bitcoin? You as an individual investor can also do the exact same thing. So that is my very long rant.
Well, it's still a little too volatile for people, right? Like, I don't know if that still holds true. It's like, if you've held Bitcoin for over 4 years, like, you're always in the green, right? With the last, you know, downturn we've seen, I don't know if that's still particularly true, but I think we're just too volatile for people now, right? Like, it's too volatile. People can still conflate Bitcoin and crypto. Like, this whole thing, like, we expect, I feel like, these price changes and to reach these, what's what I'm looking for? These like pinnacles of, or measures of success, these $100,000 marks, millions, whatever. It's going to happen so much slower, I think, than anybody thinks. You know, we have like, was it Kathy Woods, like 1 million by 2030. Would love that. Sounds great. That just seems so fast though, doesn't it? Like, do you guys think that's even realistically possible?
It's all just,
I mean, I would trade 1 million by 2030 with, you know, 500 million newly onboarded Bitcoin holders, and they can do whatever they want with it. They can buy, they can sell. You know, I think for me, like, the important thing is getting people to recognize its strengths and to use it as a tool in whatever way they choose, and companies as well. The companies have a hard time stomaching the volatility. I think one interesting thing about the treasury companies is something like 90% of them didn't even do the thing they said they would do. They bought Bitcoin like maybe once. And failed to gain any sort of traction, like failed to accumulate in a compelling way, failed to significantly boost their stock price, failed to, you know, survive out this bear market completely. And I think maybe in some ways some of them were too early, or as Q said, their underlying businesses really weren't strong enough. A lot of it is they didn't have the teams or kind of the brains to make those strategic trades in an intelligent way, and to handle sort of, let's be honest, the community building and sort of the hype cycle that was propelling all of these. It doesn't look too terribly different from, you know, an old altcoin cycle when you zoom out.
I also want to just bring up, I think the government's involvement is playing a big factor in a lot of this. I think, for example, you know, we had in March of 2025, like, we have a strategic Bitcoin reserve bill that Trump passed. We have the 300,000 Bitcoin that, you know, we have confiscated, but we still don't know like who's in charge of that. We have no clear directive on like adopting Bitcoin. And then, you know, I will always say this, whether or not like people want to label me with TDS, even though like it's far from that. People will naturally have an aversion to Bitcoin and adopting Bitcoin because it's being associated and affiliated now with Trump and the Trump insiders. No different than as we're seeing the news out of Russia, where Russia may start to accept Bitcoin as cross-border payments. Like, there will now be a new contingent of people who are adversarial or against Bitcoin. And I want to kind of present this question to you guys of like, how do we as Bitcoiners who understand like these type of things are irrelevant, how do we convince the layman to understand like that is actually a good thing for Bitcoin and its growth and adoption on a global scale?
Well, Bitcoin is for enemies. I mean, I don't want to control the usage of it, you know, by Trump or anyone else. I think it's really hard to sit back and say, is he a sort of a net positive or negative for Bitcoin? It kind of depends on the day, right? You know, the day he freed Ross Ulbricht, that was pretty amazing, compelling. The lip service paid to a strategic reserve was pretty cool. I mean, it's cool to see, regulatory clarity coming to pass in increments over time. But I wouldn't really go out and, you know, bet my career, put all my eggs in the politician basket, right? They're incentivized to get themselves reelected. They'll betray you in an instant, sort of once your time in the spotlight has faded. I don't think that system is really set up to benefit the underlying populace in the way that just kind of learning about it on your own and, you know, running your own node and getting a hold of some Bitcoin will serve the common person at home. What was your underlying question, Q? Forgot.
Like, I mean, you essentially touched on it. It's like the idea that we have these adversarial people to contingents or to groups of people. Like, you're not going to convince me that people in Ukraine who are not fans of Putin are going to watch Russia say we accept Bitcoin for cross-border trade and be like, well, that's cool, like we should do it too. It's like they'll probably just naturally have that knee-jerk reaction. And I think to your point, like the simping that we have seen by Bitcoiners for like government officials to pass Bitcoin legislation, like even Lummis is, in my opinion, like the only one who understands Bitcoin. Everyone else just gives you lip service to get your vote. No one else, in my opinion, has actually done anything that has helped move Bitcoin forward. But even still, it's like, why does it matter? And to use our, to at least make sure I, again, like use the thumbnail that we're using, like, and use the China example very well. Like, China banned Bitcoin mining in May of 2021. They are reported to have over 190,000 Bitcoin that they've confiscated throughout multiple wallets. Bitcoin didn't care about legislation that China pushed forward that was negative in the short term, nor should we care about any positive, in my opinion, however you want to spin it, positive lawmaking, positive rules that are being put in place by any government. Like, this is meant to be the separation of government and money. So I think, personally, I think you, as a Bitcoiner, should be embarrassed about simping over any elected official doing anything and celebrating it. Dennis Porter. Sorry.
Really?
Now, Q, you mentioned something I want to talk about here that was interesting, too. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was like in the last week or two, Palm Beach International Airport is being named to Trump. And United Airlines is now offering anybody flying into that like has a problem with the name change, they will freely divert to a couple other airports just because of the name association. So we have to realize, like, it is real. Bitcoin's what, 17 years old or whatever, and Trump has been president for what, about like 6 of those years. People are going to conflate the two whether we like it or not. It's just a thing that's going to change with time, right? As Trump is out and someone else is in and Bitcoin is still here, people are going to realize, like, hey, this isn't necessarily a Trump thing. He just happened to be the guy who was in office during a good portion of its, you know, growing up phase. So it's an unfortunate reality, but people are going to conflate this until Trump is out, and then it'll just change. It takes time, guys. We're so early, you know? I mean, how long? People don't think about, like, gold, right? And be like, oh, Saddam had all that gold. Like, gold is bad. It's just, it's been around forever, so we accept it. I think that we're just in that process here
too. Oh, I think about that almost every damn day. But that's a topic for a bottle of whiskey, you and I, and not on camera. I am not suicidal. But I think also, McShane, you bring up an excellent point that I'm going to try to ramble until I remember what I was going to say.
Well, I was just going to say that liberals need money too. So, you know, eventually they'll come around.
Yes. Yes. The classic Michael Jordan line. Republicans buy sneakers too.
Michael Jordan said that? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Republicans buy sneakers. Yeah.
Republicans buy sneakers too. Because he wouldn't support some Democrat politician in North Carolina.
I mean, it just, if you're making your decisions based on what's sort of popular narratives or these sort of idols that you make out of politicians, that's really a skill issue. At the end of the day, you're going to be better off doing your own diligence and looking into it yourself. So,
I just remembered. So, in case you guys didn't realize, Trump is actually a longtime viewer. He and I, like, we DM regularly, so he's watching. I have asked you, bro, multiple times, can you just shut up and focus on this economy, the American economy, for 1 week? 1 week, you can pump my bags. You can pump all of our bags. If you just, like, I don't know, put down the twatter and the other Truth Social, just like focus on us, the USA, for a week, 1 week. Like pump my bags, bro, please. That is all. Thank you.
He's trying to make it great again. All right, Q. He's doing his best, I think. Maybe. I don't know.
But it is just Q's not enjoying America 250. You didn't like the White House card? Come on, bro.
Bro.
That was an awesome card. That was an awesome
card. Dude, I mean, I'm a soccer guy, so like I was World Cup fevered nonstop, and like there were moments that I was very proud of, like the American populace and citizens and the way we embraced a lot of other cultures coming in. And then I was constantly embarrassed by the actions of our government and our officials. And it like dawned on me, and I had this conversation on like a different side of Twitter because I'm very, very vocal about everything going on in Iran. But like it's been lost on me at some points where I'm like, I really hope that people from other countries don't view me in the same way that they view Trump and think that like just because Trump is our president, that like everything he does, like I'm supportive of. And I would hope that that level of grace is afforded to me, and that I should be reminded and remember, like for across the board in plenty of other countries, that grace should also be given for people in Palestine, for people in Iran, for people in Israel. They should all be given that grace and not be held accountable for the action of their government. Now look, if they're turning around and saying like our government's right, they're great, blah blah blah, like all right, like then governments around the world are in the wrong, but everyone needs to read, every Bitcoiner needs to read, oh my god, what was the book that CK used to hand out to everyone, McShane? Sovereign Individual. Yes, every Bitcoiner needs to read this book. It's dry, it's hard, it's a textbook, but read it, just read it.
I'm reading a lot of weakness in the Argentinians after Messi's whining. So.
I mean, the brawl at the end of the final was embarrassing, but you know,
super embarrassing. Oh my god!
I say this as a man whose profile picture is at the last World Cup in a Messi jersey, and I still was rooting for Spain at this one. I don't like dynasties. I'm not a big dynasty. The world won.
Q, I gotta ask you, how do you gotta feel a little happy about, we saw all these people from the World Cup. I feel like the World Cup has actually done a great job in kind of maybe changing the narrative on the American people and America as a whole, right? Because you have all these like Europeans and people, and they're like, people here are great. Like, we've been fed this line of BS from the media, and they see Trump and they just assume we're all like it. But are you happy that we saw so many great stories come out of this World Cup where people are like, hey, America's all right. We had it wrong. It's nice, right? We're not
like 100%. Like, dude, okay, this was a running bit at Bitcoin Magazine where I used to like pick random commodities, and in 12 months, like the commodities would blow up. And I am telling you, just buy futures in all of the ingredients in ranch. I'm telling you, ranch dressing is about to have its boom moment. I'm making my call here right now. Dude, did you not see the trend? We're like, no. TSA had to put out a notice essentially asking all international travelers to not put ranch dressing bottles in their carry-on bags. And they like showed like bins full of confiscated ranch dressing because people were like trying to bring it back with them to Europe or wherever else they're from. Like, I talked about this with my brother. I hope in my lifetime I get to see Iran host a World Cup. Because in the same way that we saw look at what happened in Kansas City with the Algerian team. Mind you, screw the Algerian team. Zero ethics. Like, should be banned from soccer, as should the Austrian team, neither here nor there. But like the way those two communities and cultures like came together, it was like poetic. It was beautiful. It's like, this is what the World Cup is meant to do. And I hope other countries around the world who have been vilified, looked down upon, have that same opportunity, have the chance to show the world like what the truth is about their culture and the people itself, and recognize that the rhetoric that were spewed by the media and the propaganda that were force-fed and our government officials do not speak for the majority of our populace.
Well, I don't know. After this ranch information, I think, guys, we need to start a Bitcoin ranch company of some kind, maybe sell it to foreign nations. Like, I didn't know ranch was that. Is that not a thing in other parts of the world?
I remember, shout out.
Oh, I was going to say, I had a German exchange student growing up at our house, and we sent him back. He took all the ranch he could get his hands on back with him to Germany.
I remember I did a project with McCormick years ago, and We were putting on a live recording of what Bitcoin did live, and we were ordering pizza, and they asked me, like, they were like, oh, like, what kind of pizza do you want? I was like, pepperoni, but like, make sure there's a side of ranch. And like, all the Brits were like, what the fuck? I was like, just trust me. And like, I blew these Brits' mind dipping pizza in ranch. And yes, that is an acceptable use of ranch dressing. Come at me, bro.
There's only one, I think, thing that's better than ranch. You guys ever had the truff hot sauce, the truffle hot sauce with pizza?
Yes. So that's
Tabasco or nothing.
No, I like Cholula, but like we're all on the same wavelength, but we've also lost the plot a little bit. We're losing the plot a little bit. So I'm gonna bring us back because I do have a job to do and remind everyone. So please go to bitcoinwell.com/signup. Use promo code podcast. You don't get anything. There's no discount. There's no free Bitcoin, but just use it so I can prove to my boss that I'm being productive and this is worth our time, effort, and energy. And of course, if you want to buy Bitcoin from a non-custodial exchange, come to Bitcoin Well. We are the only non-custodial exchange available in the United States. There's no other place. Everywhere else, you have to go through a custodial exchange. We are the only non-custodial exchange in existence or available in the United States. We have a couple minutes. I want to bring it back a little bit to the Bitcoin of it, even though I could talk soccer and ranch dressing with both of you for years on end. Is there anything in particular that over the last 6 months has come up that we haven't had a chance to talk about? Hank, I'll start with you since you've been asking the best questions here today.
Ooh, I don't know if that's true. That we haven't talked about. I'm still of the belief, and this is really off topic, but I think it could relate to Bitcoin. So I've probably talked to McShane about this before, and I've had a couple of guests on our show that we talked about it. Is I think that, you know, there's been like a lot of talk about aliens and stuff recently. I'm of the opinion that aliens are actually future humans, like a space tourism, and they actually brought us Bitcoin so we'd have sound money in the future. And that's where I think, that's why we don't know who Satoshi is, that's why the aliens haven't enslaved us yet. It's all part of a bigger thing: future humans, Bitcoin, sound money from the future. That's my thing.
Wait, was it Adam Back or was it Dhruv that said that like Bitcoin is not sustainable in a multiplanetary world?
You know, I actually think I brought this up to Adam Back. He didn't mention that, but he didn't seem too keen on the idea that it was alien. So maybe he knows something I don't.
I think there's some sort of delay. It has to do with
time. It's transmitting block time.
Yeah.
You could use it on the moon. You could transmit it, but you couldn't use it on Mars. It's solved by bearer instruments. You could still trade Bitcoin on other planets as a bearer instrument. And you can use Bitcoin by virtue of just holding some. So you can use it anywhere.
Yeah.
All right. So we will need some kind of interplanetary Bitcoin, it sounds like, or some kind of patch at some point.
No. It works. No? It works fine. It works. You trade it like you would trade a dollar. You trade a monetary instruments, bearer instruments. Good.
I love how we're already planning on how we're going to transact on Mars as if we're like all there right now. I mean, this is all a simulation. None of this is real anyways.
Yeah.
One step closer to Mars every day, Q. Did you jump in on the SpaceX IPO?
Oof. So I traded it to a T. I looked up, my brother was like convinced we should do it. And I was like, all right, like, let me like dig into this a little bit more because there are unlocks. And then I found that the employee unlock was at a 30% premium from the price. So then we sold half of our shares at the 30% premium and then sold the rest like 2 days later. And I've literally just been taking victory laps in our group chat with his buddy, who's a financial advisor. And just like, we traded this perfectly. Oh my God. But I feel like shitty a little bit because like I left someone else holding the bag, but I'm also like, I need to make money. Like I'm done trying to be the nice guy. Like this is not my rug pull. This was Elon's.
Yeah, there's no honor in being exit liquidity. Sorry, Q. So I think you made the right move.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
But also shout out Elon, longtime viewer, longtime subscriber to the channel. For those of you who are watching on YouTube either now or on a tape delay, please like and subscribe down below. I'm trying to grow this YouTube channel, trying to make sure that this is actually being watched by anyone other than me and the 500 times that I just like refresh to get a new view on YouTube. McShane, we have a couple minutes. I'll leave you with one of the final thoughts or words before we wrap things up here today, my friend.
Hopefully everybody listening has already self-custodied some Bitcoin. If you're new, you know, class of whatever, 2024 and onward, and you just bought the the treasury stocks, you don't have any of the underlying guarantees. So get your Bitcoin off exchanges, self-custody it, or if you can't do that, you know, find a custodian whose sort of trade-offs you enjoy and stash it there. But I think there's no harm in at least trying this stuff. Try to use the tech as it was meant to be used in an open and permissionless way, without trust in third parties, and it will only benefit you. Actually, the great thing now versus, you know, 5-10 years ago is you can have AI sort of help you through the technical hurdles. Like, you can learn this stuff really fast without paying for courses or anything. It just takes an afternoon. So yeah, go try it.
Or go to bitcoinwell.com/infinite, and free of charge, you can have a Bitcoin advisor help guide you to figure out what wallet makes sense for you, how to set up your wallet, and how to make your first Bitcoin purchase at a non-custodial exchange. So you will immediately be a self-custodied Bitcoin holder rather than trusting Coinbase or any of these other silly little custodial exchanges with your money and funds. Because we saw how well that worked out in 22, right? I mean, look, am I not allowed to say these things? Is SBF finally like out of jail, literally and figuratively?
I think, who's going to play him in the movie, you think? Is it going to be like Jonah Hill or something?
I'm in negotiations right now, in all honesty.
Ooh, I like it. I'm excited for that.
No, I hope it's Seth Rogen. I feel like he's got like the Jufro a little bit, like that works.
I could see that. Yeah. Maybe even like a Miles Teller dressed up the right way. You kind of, you know, he's like the Hollywood version of SBF, maybe like a little better looking. You get his hair frizzy. He's a good actor.
Yeah. Yeah. McShane, yeah. Did you watch Disclosure Day?
No, I don't know. I don't know what that is.
What? It's the new Spielberg movie about like aliens and like disclosing that we've been in touch with aliens. So, okay.
Maybe I should check that out.
Text me when you watch it. Like, that's all I'm going to say. Okay. I'm not going to tell you if it's good or bad. Just text me when you watch it and we'll have a discussion. But I'm going to wrap it up here, guys. It was an absolute pleasure having both of you join us. Everyone who is watching, please, please, please go to bitcoinwell.com/signup. Use promo code podcast. You get nothing. It's just so I can keep my job and keep spamming your Twitter feeds all day, every day. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Peace.